WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is Phil Tippett. He's a leader in the revival of stop-motion animation. It's a technique that dates back to the early days of filmmaking, the technique that made King Kong, Mighty Joe Young, and countless monsters and dinosaurs move. It's done by manipulating three-dimensional models and filming them one frame at a time. Tippett's latest film credit is RoboCop. He animated Ed 209, the totally mechanized police robot. He also brought to life the dragon in the movie Dragon Slayer and won an Academy Award for his work in Return of the Jedi. When I spoke to Phil Tippett, he told me that ever since he was a kid, stop-motion animation was what he wanted to do.
First time I had noticed anything at all was on television in 1958, and it was an ad for a movie called The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. And I harangued my parents for weeks and weeks and weeks to take me to see the picture. And they did, and that hooked me. It was a film that was done by Charles Schneer, the producer, and Ray Harryhausen, who was the preeminent stop-motion animator throughout the 50s and 60s.
What did you love about it?
There was an unreality that was implicit in the process of stop-motion animation that I found fascinating. There's a kind of a geometry or like a dance or a ballet that these inanimate objects are put through, and the process of imagining something in your mind and physically manipulating a three-dimensional object to achieve what's in your mind leaves you with a result that is almost surreal.
I'm going to ask you for a crash course on stop motion animation. Would you describe first, when is stop motion used?
Well, I think the best way to describe stop motion first is to mention how it's different from cartoon animation or two-dimensional animation, which is how Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck are created. And in that process, you have a number of pieces of paper with drawings on each sheet. In one frame, Donald Duck's hand might be over his head, the next frame a little bit lower, a little bit lower in the next frame, and on and on and on until you get a successive buildup of images that you shoot one frame at a time, and it creates the illusion that Donald Duck's hand is moving from the top of his head down to his waist, say. Well, in stop-motion animation, we're working with a three-dimensional model. So when you're moving the creature, say the arm, you move it, position it a tiny fraction of an inch, you step away from the model, you take one frame of film, and then you move back, you move the arm again, step away from the model, take one more frame of film, and in that way, similar to cartoon animation, you build up a succession of movements one frame at a time that when the film is later strung together, run on a projector, gives you the illusion of movement.
The way you describe the process, it sounds so complex and so detailed. It makes me wonder why in the movie RoboCop they didn't get a man in a robot suit for Ed 209, for the totally mechanized police robot.
Well, one of the reasons why we decided to go with stop-motion animation was because the producer fortunately loves stop-motion animation and is a big fan of the process.
It's interesting you should say that, because when I was watching the movie, I really thought of those scenes as a tribute to King Kong.
Well, we didn't think of it as a tribute to King Kong so much as trying to make the best robot movie that had ever been made. RoboCop itself, the character RoboCop, comes from a tradition of robot suit movies that date back to Fritz Lang's Metropolis, and you can see the C-3PO character in the Star Wars series, and now there's RoboCop, and all of these are built around the human frame foundation for obvious reasons. So we decided very clearly to go with a design, or very early on to go with a design for Ed 209 that was, if you looked at it from the side, that was very much like a Z shape. And we wanted it to be very clear that there was no way that a human being could possibly be inside. We wanted it to make a very functional, utilitarian piece of hardware. We conceived of Ed 209 as a cross between a lathe and a Mack truck, something that was absolutely efficient, that didn't move until it had to, and didn't have any gratuitous action, that really didn't perform little character anomalies at all. He was just a very straightforward moving object, and it became very clear that this was the right way to go using stop motion animation.
What are some of the big differences between how you do stop animation now and how it was done in the early days, in the days that King Kong was shot?
There is virtually no difference. The techniques that we use for RoboCop, even down to the photographic processes, were in many ways identical to the processes that were used on King Kong, and definitely Mighty Joe Young. The equipment that we use, in fact, is equipment that was developed in the 20s. We use old Mitchell high-speed cameras that are very reliable and remarkably well-engineered pieces of machinery. And one of the process projectors or rear screen background projectors that we used was developed for Mighty Joe Young and adapted to work on more current films.
Early on in your career, you did stop motion animation for Jolly Green Giant and Pillsbury Doughboy commercials. Were those commercials good preparation for the kind of major motion pictures you've since done?
Yeah, I think in general, television commercials were a very good, like high school or junior college course, say for working in feature films. In that, you don't work on projects of long duration. Each commercial would last from 4 to 6 weeks, depending upon how complicated they were. So you'd be in and out, and you would have accrued a number of different techniques and processes, and also a great deal of experience with working with different types of people.
When you were breaking into the movie industry, did you do any special effects for cheap, low-budget movies, kind of any stupid movies?
Let's see, I worked on one called The Crater Lake Monster in the mid-70s that you probably never saw.
You're right.
Nobody else probably, I don't think they saw it. Then I worked on a Roger Corman project called Piranha that brought together Joe Dante, who has just released Interspace. He's the director of Interspace this summer, and John Davison, who's the producer of RoboCop. That's where I met those two men.
That has a screenplay by John Sayles, I think.
Yes, it does. And we were able to slip some stop-motion animation into that, in addition to a number of visual effects with fish and water. And that was about it. Most of my work had been done in television commercials prior to that time. It was very difficult to get into the motion picture industry because of unions, number one. We were all working non-union at the time. And number two, no one was making science fiction-oriented films until Lucas cracked the nut with Star Wars.
So there was not much call for stop-motion work in films for a while?
No, there was literally zero. I mean, there might have been, at least in the L.A., contingency of stop motion animation, there might have been like one or two films made over a 20-year period.
Was there no stop motion animation because the process had gone out of favor, or because those kinds of movies weren't being made?
I think a bit of both. No one had really handled the subject matter to any compelling degree at all, and I think that was one of the problems. The process was stuck with the stigma of not being any good, because the films that they were in weren't any good until George Lucas and Steven Spielberg came along and showed that it was possible to make engaging or entertaining movies using visual effects.
Filmgoers nowadays assume that anything is possible through special effects, and it looks so easy when you're just watching it on screen. Is that ever frustrating for you?
Well, it can be frustrating. It really depends on the approach that one takes. If you're working in the context of a low-budget film, you're very limited to certain processes, and when you're doing that, there are certain things that you can't do, and you have to adhere very, very carefully to certain rules, as we did in RoboCop. When Paul Verhoeven, the director, and I first got together, we spent hours and hours and hours going over the limitations of the process until Paul understood how he could make the limitations work for him dramatically.
Phil Tippett did the stop-motion animation for the movie RoboCop. He spoke to us from NPR station KQED in San Francisco.